You have the basic birth of civilization in the Near East with the great river valleys then as the main source areas, the Nile, the Tigris-Euphrates, and then over in India, the Indus Valley and later the Ganges. This is the world of the goddess. All these rivers have goddess names, finally. Then there come the invasions. Now, these fighting people are herding people. The Semites are herders of goats and sheep, and the Indo-Europeans of cattle. They were formerly the hunters. They translate a hunting mythology into a herding mythology, but it's animal-oriented. And when you have hunters, you have killers. And when you have herders, you have killers, because they're always in movement, nomadic, coming into conflict with other people, and they have to conquer the area they move into. This comes into the Near East, and this brings in the warrior gods, like Zeus, like Yahweh.
The sword and death instead of fertility.
Right. Particularly the Hebrews. They really wipe out the goddess. The term for the goddess, the Canaanite goddess that's used in the Old Testament, is the abomination. And so many of the Hebrew kings are condemned in the Old Testament for having worshipped on the mountaintops. Mm-hmm. That's the goddess. And there was a very strong accent against the goddess in the Hebrew, which you do not find in the Indo-European. There you have Zeus marrying the goddess, yeah. And then the two play together. I think it's an extreme case that we have in the Bible. And our own Western subjugation of the female is really, I think, a function of biblical thinking.
Because when you substitute the male for the female, you get a different psychology, a different cultural bias.
Particularly if you cut the female out and don't have any, I mean, if the male is on top like this, and the female is the subordinate all the way, you have a totally different system from that when the two are facing each other.
And it's permissible in your culture to do what your gods do, so you just...
Well, that's exactly it. So I would see three situations here. One, the early one of the sheer goddess, when the male is hardly a significant divinity. You see, she is the total thing. And then this other one of the Hebrew, of the goddess, the male, the total thing. In fact, he takes over her role. And finally, then, the classical one, where the two are in interaction.
There are women today who say that the spirit of the goddess has been in exile for 5,000 years since the events
you can't put it that far back, 5,000 years. She was a very potent figure in Hellenistic times in the Mediterranean. And she came back with the Virgin in the Roman Catholic tradition. I mean, you don't have a tradition with the goddess celebrated any more beautifully and marvelously than in the 12th and 13th century French cathedrals, every one of which is called Notre Dame.
What about the virgin birth? Suddenly the goddess reappears in the form of the chaste and pure vessel chosen for God's action.
Well, in the history of Western religions, this is an extremely interesting development. The virgin birth comes in by way of the Greek tradition. When you read your four Gospels, the only one with the virgin birth in it is the Gospel according to Luke, and Luke was a Greek.
And there was in the Greek tradition images, legends, myths of virgin birth?
All of them. I mean, the Leda and the swan, and Persephone and the serpent, and this one and that one and the other one. The virgin birth is represented throughout.
This was not a new idea then in Bethlehem?
No.